In June of this year, Roger Martin published an article in the Harvard Business Review entitled How Successful Leaders Think. I thought it would be important for us to kind of review some of the major concepts related to the thinking of the leader as a foundation for forming a framework for your own leadership development and your frame of reference for thinking. Leaders do think differently from workers and from other roles in the organization. If they are to thrive and to bring the organization and move it in a direction that is meaningful for both the organization and for the individuals that are in it. Effective leadership requires effective action. Decisiveness and clarity and direction are really clearly elements of leadership that are very important to the effective application of leadership. But what seems to be most important, Martin points out, is that their deeds, if they are good leaders, can provide a lot of support and information with regard to our own leadership and how it unfolds. Often in leadership literature, Martin points out, we focus a lot on what a leader does, and certainly there's some value in looking at the work of leaders and what has been successful in terms of their application. But he suggests what's even more important is to really kind of determine, what are the thought processes of the leader? How do they put together their thinking, and how does that thinking drive the action that they will subsequently take? He suggests that we recall Jack Welch early in his career at General Electric by insisting that each of GE's businesses be number one or number two in their own markets. Years later, he even insisted those same businesses define their markets so that their share were no longer greater than 10%. Forcing leaders to look beyond just their narrowly conceived notion of the market. Understanding what Jack Welch did was important, but it does invite confusion and incoherence because he wisely pursued diametrically opposed courses at different points in his career and certainly at different points in GE's life. So the issue isn't so much what did he do, but what was his thinking? What informed what he did? How did that thinking guide subsequent action, and how did it relate to a difference in context and framework with regard to what would subsequently be undertaken in organizations and in the expression of his own leadership skills? Martin quotes F. Scott Fitzgerald 60 years after making the quote, with the words, "The ability to hold two opposing ideas in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function are the signs of a truly intelligent individual." This insight can be easy to miss in the mind of the leader, since much of management conversation has tilted away from thinking and really focused on doing. Also, many great integrative thinkers aren't even aware of their capacity or their capability for thinking, and thus don't necessarily consciously and verbally extrapolate it and exercise it. Indeed, what we really want to be able to do, and what Martin points out, is to deconstruct and describe the capacity that seems to come naturally to good leaders, so that we can begin to see what are the elements of their thinking, so that by replicating it and expanding on it, we can also apply those same skillful levels of leadership thinking and application to our own roles and lead our organizations to a higher level of success in applying those roles. Martin suggests that a fundamental skill for leaders is the ability to resolve the apparent choice between two unattractive models or choices. He suggests that it's the leader's use of an innate but underdeveloped human characteristic, something that he likes to call the human trait the opposite mind. Martin suggested human beings are distinguished from nearly every other creature by physical features, the opposable thumbs. Thanks to the tension that can be created by opposing thumbs and fingers, we can do marvelous things with our hands. Although this evolution, he suggests, provides human beings with a potential advantage, it would clearly have gone to waste if our species had not exercised it in even more sophisticated ways. We are also, he suggests, born with opposable minds. This allows the leader to hold two conflicting ideas in constructive, almost dialectic tension. He suggests that this tension provides us a way to think our way through new, more superior ideas. We're able to hold not only one thought or idea in our heads at a time, and as a result, we're able to overcome the limitations that would occur if we didn't have access to insights that the opposable mind can produce. He suggests that people don't develop this because they don't exercise this capacity in great efforts. Great integrative thinkers actually are fairly rare. This potentially powerful but latent tool is used infrequent, even though it could provide great advantage. Putting it to work makes us a little anxious. Examining it makes us even more anxious. Avoiding complexity and ambiguity and the confrontation of two opposing forces in our mind affects our values and our thinking and our ability to make choices. In nursing leadership especially, we're used to making concrete best choices and out of those best choices taking action that best choice indicates. There are times, however, when there is more than one best choice, and sometimes the best choices may be opposing choices. The leader now must be able to develop the skill of drawing from each of those information and access to resources that would help make a best decision that may, in the final analysis, not be either one of those choices. One of the things we often do in nursing leadership, our first leadership impulse, is to determine which of two choices or two models is right, and eliminating information and feedback until we get to what is either the wrong or the right choice. We then begin to take sides with regard to the choice and attempt to prove that our chosen model is the better choice than the one that we are rejecting. But sometimes, in rejecting one model out of hand and all that relates to it, we may miss out on all the value that can be actualized by considering the implications and the values in the opposing choice. In the tension are some of the solutions that the leader might want to undertake to be able to resolve some of the conflicts that may lie in making an appropriate choice. This personal trait of trying to choose between choices is often present in organizations and can be seen at almost any level of organizational function. The leader must be aware of this activity going on all around her or him and must be able to compensate for the absolute dichotomy of choices that lie in front of them as a way of confronting that dichotomy and beginning to start making choices based on the value that can be found in any number of elements related to one choice or the other. To take advantage of the opposable mind, the leader must really resist this natural tendency towards simply making a choice between one particular model or one choice and another. Often what the leader is able to discover is a new model or a different approach emerges out of consideration of both choices, one of which might have been rejected out of hand, one of which may be selected as preferential, and both of which may not have been the best or wisest choice that could be made if both were examined equally and critically in relationship to forming a new choice. Often settling for an either-or choice limits the leader's ability to make different selections or different choices by drawing information from both either-or choices and allowing that information and new insights or peripheral insights or new information altogether to lead in a third direction and provide an alternative or an innovative set of choices that may actually be better in the long run and more viable and creative for the organization. Martin suggests that integrative thinkers, those thinkers that are able to synthesize and converge thinking around particular points of direction or value, are better thinkers and better leaders in the organization. He indicates that there are four stages of decision-making through which these integrative thinkers operate through. The stages or steps themselves aren't particular to integrative thinking, but everybody goes through them while making a decision. But what's distinctive about integrative thinkers, he suggests, is how they approach the steps. The four stages of integrative thinking are number one, determining salience, number two, analyzing causality, number three, envisioning the decision architecture, and number four, achieving resolution. Now, conventional thinkers operate in a particular way in each one of these stages, where integrative thinkers operate differently. He suggests in the first stage, determining salience, that the conventional thinker focus only on obvious relevant features, while the integrative thinker seeks less obvious but potentially relevant factors. In the second stage, analyzing causality, Martin suggests that conventional thinkers consider one-way linear relationships between variables, in which more of A produces more of B. He suggests that integrative thinkers, on the other hand, consider multi-directional and non-linear relationships among the variables confronted. In phase three, envisioning the decision architecture, Martin suggests that conventional thinkers break problems into pieces and work on them separately, or sometimes sequentially. However, on the other hand, he suggests that integrative thinkers see problems as a whole, examining how the parts fit together and how decisions affect one another. Finally, in achieving resolution, Martin suggests that the conventional thinker makes either-or choices and settles for the best available options within the context of either-or choices. He suggests, however, that the integrative thinker creatively resolves tensions among opposing ideas, generating innovative outcomes instead of usual and routine outcomes. If we break down each of the four stages, beginning with stage one, determining salience, we note that in that stage, the leader is figuring out which factors to take into account. In the conventional approach, as we mentioned, the role is to discard as many of those factors as possible. This helps the leader reduce exposure to uncomfortable complexity and allows the leader to filter out salient features when considering an issue. As leaders also do this because of how most organizations are themselves structured. Martin suggests that each functional specialty has its own narrow view of what merits consideration. For example, the finance department looks traditionally at the financial aspects of making choice. The clinical departments may look at service, quality, and outcome aspects of making choice. Different factors, different measure, different elements. When our decisions turn out badly, he suggests, we often recognize after the fact that we failed to consider factors that were significant to those outside the immediate reach of our departments or our jobs and roles or the infrastructure of organizations. We often suggest that we should have thought outside how others think and how others act and how others would do, but we only usually do that as an evaluative process. The integrative thinker actively seeks less obvious but potentially relevant factors, Martin points out. He suggests that the more salient features make for a messier problem, but the integrative thinkers don't mind the mess. As a matter of fact, that information allows them to embrace a whole diversity of data and allow them to bring that data to bear on the problem as a whole. The integrative thinker actually welcomes the complexity and messiness of the information that's presented because embedded inside of it are the best answers, the most creative and innovative solutions. Here, the integrative leader is confident that they can sort their way through all of the mess and complexity and chaos and find through it the emergence of a new idea, a new thought, or a clear resolution of the problem. Viewing these concerns as salient helps the leader conclude a resolution to a problem or a situation in an entirely creative and new way, with tools and information that wouldn't have been available if he had been making or she had been making choices too soon. The second phase, analyzing causality, provides a step of decision making where analysis of the numerous salient factors relate to one another. Now, here again, the conventional thinker tends to take the same narrow view of causality as they do of salience. The simplest type of all straight-line causal relationship is considered. It's no accident, Martin suggests, that linear regression is often the business world's preferred tool for establishing relationship between variables. There are a huge range of other tools available, but most managers shun them because, here again, they're complex, they're messy, they're not straight-line, and the direction established between cause and effect is not so clearly enumerated. However, Martin suggests that the integrative thinker isn't afraid to question the validity of apparently obvious links, or to consider multidirectional and nonlinear relationships influencing the direction taken or the choices that lie ahead. Rather than simply thinking that a competitor's price cutting is hurting our bottom line, the integrative thinker may conclude our product introduction really upset our rivals. Now they're cutting prices in response, and our profitability is suffering. So therefore, a new kind of relationship between our product and their activity needs to be established in order to seek a new way of becoming profitable. Using these skills, the leader creates a more nuanced perception or picture of the situation or occurrence or the universe within which they live in order to provide a different set of relationships, to see a different kind of impacts and intersections, and to be able to recognize that not everything is a causal relationship, that there are other kinds of relationships, an inferred or inferential or sometimes non-directive relationship that may be obtained through an analysis of the situation through different eyes, through a different viewpoint, and through combining data in different, more creative ways to determine what it is really saying about direction, meaning, value, and ultimately decision-making. In the third stage of the integrative leadership process, envisioning the decisional architecture, the leader begins to build on causal relationships and the salient feature skills that were mentioned earlier on. Martin suggests that the order in which you make decisions will affect the outcome. Even simple questions of whether to go to a movie involves deciding, at the very least, what movie to see, which theater to go, what showing to attend, who's going with you, how you're going to get there. All of these questions relate to a single decision and a single action. For example, you may not be able to see your preferred movie if you've already decided you need to be back in time to relieve a babysitter who has plans for later in the evening. When you're trying to invent new kinds of models, whether they be business models, leadership models, or clinical models, the number of decision-making variables explode. Martin suggests that what comes with this impulse is not only an attempt to establish a strict sequence in which issues will be considered, but also to kind of dole out pieces of a decision so that the various parties can work on them separately. What happens in this scenario, however, is that each one loses sight of the overriding issue or the whole, and often a mediocre outcome is the result, Martin suggests. So that integrative thinkers, when they begin to start building on decisional architecture, they don't necessarily break a problem down into independent pieces and work on them separately in a certain specified order. Often they look at the entire architecture of a problem, how its various parts not break down, but actually fit together, how one decision fits another, how it affects another, how it relates to another. Just as importantly, Martin suggests they hold all of these pieces suspended in their mind at one time so that they can kind of look at them in one dimension, like a holograph, all around, within, and through them, as a way of seeing them more completely. An architect doesn't ask those who report to him to design a perfect bathroom and a perfect living room and a perfect kitchen independent of each other and then hope the pieces of the house will fit nicely together. The architect designs each of those rooms with regard to their own functions, but also considers how do they fit together to create an integrated whole, to create a home, to create a flow of activity and functions that will go on within the home. The leader holds simultaneously in his head a number of issues, the feelings and challenges of a particular leadership individual or other individuals, the clinical insights of practitioners, and the broad, diverse views of different disciplines, the dynamics of individual thoughts, as well as the impact of the whole, the organization, the company, the structure, and the relationships between various departments and divisions. All of those things, the intersections, the cross-referencing, helps the leader see the whole structure, the whole business, if you will. Each factor looked at separately could push the leader towards a separate decision on how to address the challenge. But when integrated and tied together and pulled together, and when the relationships and flow and intersections between each of these issues are moved towards the creation of the model or the insight that the leader is developing, one based on the belief that the integrated whole creates a fuller picture of reality, is, for the leader, the sign of critical success and of movement in the right direction. Finally, in the fourth stage, achieving resolution, Reflection of all of the stages, determining what is salient, analyzing causal relationships between salient factors, and examining the architecture of the problem lead to specified outcomes, to values, to achievement. Too often the leader accepts, Martin suggests, an unpleasant trade-off with relatively little complaints, and it appears to be the best alternative among a choices of alternative. Of course, the integrative leader doesn't do this. Usually this occurs because the non-integrative leader by that time has reached a stage for simplicity that leads us to ignore opportunities represented in the previous three stages to discover both the interesting and novel ways around the trade-offs that might be present in simply making linear choices. Instead of looking deeper and going beyond meager and unattractive alternative choice processes, the integrative leader moves beyond, sees the relationship between all of the elements related to choice, sees good choices in bad directions, sees bad direction in particular choices, and begins to start seeing the picture of the whole architecture in a way that has meaning and value, and moves all of this convergence, this coalescing, this synthesis of information and of process towards a creative, innovative, meaningful, and hopefully appropriate decision or outcome. Here, the thinking of the intuitive leader, Martin suggests, is very different from the thinking that produces most management decisions. Not accept an either-or as the point of reference within which to make choices and to move towards effective decision-making. Here, we can see that through looking carefully at integrative decisions versus conventional decision-making, that integrative thinking generates options and new solutions in an entirely different frame from those we've traditionally become used to. For the contemporary innovative and creative leader, it now creates a sense of limited possibilities and connections that form the foundation or the basis upon which future decisions can be made. The emerging leader now must reject the conventional, iterative, linear thinking processes and glossing over potential solutions that foster an illusion that solutions don't exactly exist in one pathway or another. The integrative thinker now has aspirations that go beyond this and continually rise over time, so that in developing the skills of integrative and cohesive thinking and being able to see the architecture of thinking all at once and looking at, if you will, open quotes, holes, close quotes, the leader begins to implement an entirely different frame of reference for thinking, for acting, and for leading. The leader must also be able to help others examine their own way of thinking and their own choice making, and begin to help them find options in what they've rejected. Help them move beyond the either-or set of notions with regard to choice making and decision making, and to find the creative options and opportunities that may actually be present in the decision that may be rejected if either-or approaches and choices are used as the method of leadership decision making in organizations and in systems. Leaders must recognize that leadership work is work, and it requires the work of leadership in ways that are unique and distinct from those that have traditionally been valued by the organization and by those who do its work. Martin suggests that the gift to use the ability for opposable minds is not reserved for a minority of people. It is a learned skill. It can be developed and it can grow. Through use of Chamberlain's multiple working hypothesis, an improvement over most commonly employed scientific methods of the time, such as testing the validity of a single hypothesis only through trial and error, can be overcome when integrative approaches, more diverse and diffuse approaches, provide a more accurate explanation of scientific phenomenon by taking into account the coordination of several elements, agencies, and interactions, which enter into the combined result in varying proportions and influence that result in differing degrees of significance. It is important that the leader acknowledge the cognitive challenges posed by an integrative approach and to begin to reflect on his or her own leadership maturity and development. Clearly, this is not an easy task, But leadership self-awareness now must call the leader to really critically examine, in a very productive and proactive way, the historic and traditional leadership decisional strategies made in the past, and begin to start considering what changes or adjustments that person needs to make in their own leadership role and skill applications. The leader needs to recognize that you are now leading in a complex, multifocal, multidisciplinary organization, and that many of the decisions that will be made in the future will not depend only on one discipline speaking to itself and relating to others only in that discipline. Increasingly, the professional leader will have an interdisciplinary audience and will have to work with interdisciplinary decisional groups around issues that have been difficult to address and to resolve between and among disciplines in the past. Therefore, the leader must begin to recognize that in clinical service settings and in leadership expression, the ability to bring diverse disciplines together, recognize the integration and implications of multidisciplinary problem solving and interdisciplinary relationship building, will now inform how the problem gets framed, how the frame of reference gets unfolded, and how integrative decisions will now guide the way in which the individual leader moves the interdisciplinary team to a more productive and meaningful decision frame for the future of their own action. Increasingly, in a multifocal, complex healthcare organization, the clinical leader will need to be able to translate the language of decision into multiple forums and frames of decision-making in words that can be understood by the different disciplines within the context of their own culture. After that having occurred, the leader must be able to bring all of the players back together around the same table, and through the perspective and the lens of their own unique, individual, and sometimes compartmental experience, begin to find the intersections, the coalescing, the cohesion that will be necessary for integrative problem solving and for seeking new kinds of solutions and new directions in meeting the needs of the organization and the needs of the future of clinical practice. Integrative thinking for the leader must become a habit of thought, Martin suggests. All of us must now, as leaders, consciously develop to arrive at solutions that it would otherwise not be evident through more traditional, more historic approaches. Through integrative leadership, solution seeking now changes in its process and in its dynamic and calls for a different way of setting the table and calling the stakeholders together and then undertaking the thought processes necessary to problem solve and to solution seek new creative and innovative solutions. Over time, the leader learns in her or her own skills how to develop the integrative approach to leadership development and then takes on the obligation of helping others take on these skills and develop integrative leadership and thinking in their own work. At some point in the future, Martin suggests, integrative leaders and integrative thinking will no longer just be a tacit skill in the heads and the hands of the very few, but will be a common leadership practice and an expectation for performance in the hands of all leaders for the future. So, in the final analysis, the obligation for healthcare leaders is to begin to start considering the implications of integrative and whole systems leadership and what it means at the individual level, how it affects the individual role, and how it challenges thinking differently about leadership thinking and decision-making and the expression of the role as an individual. Following this, as the role begins to unfold, the leader must think about the organization and others and the impact of integrative thinking on the role of others in their decision-making and their collaborative efforts to solution-seek and innovation-find in organizations that are in a constant state of change. In the final analysis, the healthcare leader of the future needs to redefine the basic skills of leadership and relationship to problem-solving, to decision-making, to relationship-building, and to innovation and creativity as new models, roles, and processes unfold to create a new direction for healthcare. Leadership, like every aspect in the healthcare system, is being redefined and reconceptualized. Martin's focus on integrative leadership simply provides one more tool, one more insight in the leadership's armamentarium of building skills and talents in providing a new direction for leadership in a complex multifocal organizational system. As we become more entwined and integrated, as we cross the disciplines, as we create new models of service that reflect more integrative and consolidated and synthesized evidence-based clinical practices, we will need new frameworks for the application of new thinking and for building new models and for testing those models in the workplace and evidencing the effective impact and outcome of those models on a different way of doing work, a different way of achieving clinical outcomes, and a different way of making a difference in the lives of those we serve.